Hello and welcome to Root Causes, the PKI and security podcast where a pair of industry veterans talk about all matters PKI and digital certificates. I am Tim Callen, senior fellow at Sigtigo, and of course I'm joined by Jason Sirocco, CTO of IoT at Sigtigo. How are you doing today, Jason?
Doing great, Tim. Thank you.
And we are very fortunate to have our repeat guest, Alan Grau, joining us today. Alan is VP of IoT and Embedded Solutions here at Sigtigo. How are you doing today, Alan?
Hi, Tim. I'm doing great.
Great. And what we're here to talk about today. So we talk a lot on this podcast about quantum computers and the threat they pose to our existing de facto encryption algorithms, RSA and ECC, and what needs to be done to change that. And what we thought we'd do today is focus in specifically of how all of this matters in the world of IoT. Because IoT is unusual in some ways, right, gentlemen?
I think one of the most interesting aspects to IoT devices, Tim, is that, you know, when I'm talking to customers, and of course, even when you just look around you, you're looking at IoT devices have already been around with us for 30 years plus. If you look at industrial control systems, been around a long time, long life cycles. Automobiles fall under that category. You're talking about, you know, cars that are probably be lasting 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and all manner of IoT devices that are beyond that as well. CCTVs that might be up there for a long time. Tim, you and I have talked a lot about crypto agility, the need for it. And I think crypto agility, that ability to just understand at the very least that the cryptographic algorithms that we're using today might not be the ones being used at the towards the middle or end of the lifetime of some of these devices that are being produced right now. That's a big topic. And I'm really glad to have Alan on today to help us understand this better.
Alan, I mean, one of the things that comes up a lot on this, of course, is the lifespan of a device, right? In the world of IoT, certainly they can be short-lived, but oftentimes they're not.
No, that's absolutely the case. And that's actually had a customer I was talking to recently that was building a disposable medical device. So it was a use once and dispose of, or use a handful of times and dispose of type of device. Yeah. And so due to the nature of the specifics of the device, they needed high levels of security to know that it was really an authentic device and was being utilized appropriately so they could track it. But you know, they don't really need to worry about crypto agility because the device won't last.
It's gone in a week or a month.
Exactly. Right. But that's really the anomaly. You know, as Jason pointed out, you know, if you look at the electric grid, right, when the folks that are managing our electric system are looking at their capital expenditures and deploying devices, right, they talk in multi-decades. And so they want and expect and need devices to be utilized over a very, very long period of time.
So multi-decades. So this certainly is problematic for those listeners who have listened to other of our episodes, including our episode on Mosca's inequality and our more recent one on quantum annealing. You know, a lot of the estimates say that in 10 or 15 years, all of our existing crypto is basically going to be valueless. So once you use a phrase like multiple decades, you know, if I want a device to last for 20 years, that's more than 15 years, according to my arithmetic. So how do we deal with that?
Well, that's really a big problem right now in the IoT world, because we don't yet have long-term solutions in place to address that. But it's something that, you know, that we really need to start thinking about in a different fashion. If you're building an IoT device, one of the things that you do need to be thinking about is, you know, what's the usable life of the device versus what's the usable life of the security on the device. There's actually a standards group or a consortium, an organization around IoT security that is defined, you know, kind of set of processes and best standards and best practices for IoT security. And again, that's an evolving process. But one of the considerations that they are including that I thought was a unique way of looking at things is an expiration date on the security for a device. And that's very different than just a lifetime for a certificate. But it is, in fact, you know, designed to start people to think about this exact problem.
So what happens when you reach the expiration date? Does that mean that device needs to be retired, or is there something that's tantamount to a firmware update where you can actually push something down and update, grade the security? Or is that unknown right now?
I think a lot of that is still in process of being defined. And we had an earlier podcast where we were talking about IoT botnets and the problems with these gaping security holes of default passwords or even devices that have access without a username and password. So anybody that can talk to the device, they don't even have to have a username and password. It will just accept the incoming connection. So the IoT world is still got these gaping security problems in many devices that have to be addressed. So we haven't yet got to the point where we've really figured out all of these considerations. But as we look at it, one of the questions that's I think people have to come to grips with is, in some cases, it does mean that the device would be operating with a deprecated level of security. And I say that because one of the best practices that the companies are using in building secure IoT devices is they're using a TPM chip or a hardware secure element on the device to enable crypto and enable secure key storage.
Right.
And so, if you look at your iPhone, your Android phone, your laptop, it's a relatively new device. Those devices have a TPM chip or other hardware secure element on the device, and that provides what's called a root of trust. But some of the things that that chip does are generate crypto key pairs. They also generate, or they also then use those key pairs for doing cryptographic operations. And the reason we do it in hardware is it's isolated from the normal processing. And if a hacker is able to gain access to the normal part of the system, they still can't cross over and steal the crypto keys.
Yeah, that's walled off.
Exactly. But what that means is, if I'm building an IoT device today, I'm building a smart connected car with a TPM chip in it. That TPM chip probably, to my knowledge, all the crypto chips being built for the IoT today support RSA and ECC encryption.
Yeah.
So those, by definition, are not going to be quantum safe.
Exactly. Now, in the case of the connected car, maybe you solve it with a recall, right? Maybe you make people bring their car back and you put in a new chip. But if I'm out, dropping things in the ocean, those are a lot harder to get back. So a lot of it depends on the device and its life cycle and how it's used, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely one of the important considerations is, if this device is going to be used for 10 years, is it going to be used for, 30 years? Is it going to be deployed in a satellite, or, is it going to be deployed in a corporate office that's, easier to gain access to? So those are some of the considerations.
So is there a possibility, and this is just me asking, and maybe the answer is no, Tim, you're crazy, but, we have a lot of candidate algorithms right now that, maybe some of them will turn out to be solid and maybe some of them will turn out to be not, but we already know that RSA and ECC are not solid in a world of quantum computing. Is it possible for people to pick one of those candidates early, like now, and start using that to sign their PKI? Or am I just living in a fantasy land?
Well, it's not a black and white answer. So you'd asked earlier, if we hit that security expiration date on a device, can we do a firmware update or do we have to update the device? Well, so a lot of that depends on how the crypto operations are being done on the device and what software update capabilities are possible on the device.
Yeah.
And so you really have to start digging pretty deep into the realities of the architecture. So I know that some of the crypto processing devices, right, some of the secure elements that are being built today do have software update capability for the crypto chip itself. And so then the question comes down to, does the underlying hardware in the crypto chip support the ability to do the appropriate, crypto operations, the basic high level or detailed mathematics of crypto that are required for these new crypto algorithms? And can they update the firmware to do that? Or is there some mechanism that can be used to allow that sort of updatability? And that's where you get into another possible solution. Some of that depends upon the underlying capability of the crypto chip itself. Some of the crypto chips do have the ability to support firmware updates to allow, changes to the crypto algorithms, potentially fix bugs, add some basic features. but it depends whether or not those crypto chips have the basic hardware support for the newer types of crypto algorithms that are being created as being, you know, quantum resistant. So certainly if you can build the hardware so that it has support for some of those crypto chips today, you know, that would help to solve the problem.
Does this pose another security challenge? Like, once you're sitting here telling me, well, I can go remotely change the crypto on these devices, then I immediately, my mind goes to, well, is a bad guy going to find the way to change the crypto and use that as their backdoor in?
That's certainly a possibility. And I think, you know, there have been some published reports of vulnerabilities and attacks against some of the crypto chips. Those have been pretty rare. Most of those chips are designed with a very controlled interface to minimize the attack possibilities and the attack vectors, but it is a possibility. So making sure that that update process is itself highly secured is important. And, you know, and then some of the other considerations are come down to what the underlying technology of the device, you know, of that crypto chip is. If they're using an FPGA technology where you can actually do essentially reprogramming of hardware through what's called a field programmable gate array, then that does open the door to potentially having more flexibility to future-proof your security, your crypto. But as you pointed out, Tim, it does also then open up some additional potential attack vectors.
Yeah, I mean, that's the trouble, right? Is the more you want to make these things flexible and agile and give access to make changes, every one of those things is a potential doorway for good, but also for misuse as well.
So Alan, when we're talking about protecting a system overall and pinning it down, things like secure boot, obviously important for anytime the device is rebooting itself, being able to double check the fact that it is running its own legitimate software that was intended by the manufacturer is just so important. That's just a thought. But another point I'd like to make here is one of the schemes that we've been hearing about is this idea of a hybrid certificate, which, you know, I think a lot of device manufacturers have an interest in sometimes doing onboard key generation. I'm a fan of offboard generation because it gives you that flexibility of having an external system with proper entropy, this ability to have flexibility. If you couple that with a hybrid certificate type where the underlying chip technology that you're talking about is able to handle a traditional crypto algorithm on the external surface of the certificate for a better way of putting it, and the underlying key material is then protected with a quantum resistant algorithm that was all generated off board. That's an interesting idea. I'm just curious to know your take on that.
No, I think these are the sorts of, you know, kind of creative thinking processes that are important in order to start to future-proof IoT devices. I mean, there is just some fundamental limitations of the device that, you know, are realities because of the current technology and cost structure. You know, the crypto resistant or the quantum resistant crypto algorithms, you know, that process is still being defined, still being refined in terms of which algorithms are ultimately going to be the ones that are selected. So we can't build them into hardware on a sub 20 cent crypto chip for a small IoT device today. But
yeah, we're definitely not talking about small sensor type devices. There's whole classes of devices that are not going to be applicable. You know, Tim, I just a thought here. This is something we really need to be putting out into the public, that there are going to be whole classes of devices that are going to have long life cycles that are going to be vulnerable, and there's almost just no way around it.
Well, and you're both touching on, I think, one of the interesting points about this topic, and this reminds me of some of what we got into in one of our recent podcasts about Musk's algorithm, is people discuss these things like it's a single homogeneous group of devices or machines, and they're all exactly the same. And in reality, they're not, right? You've got different lifespans, different use cases, different levels of accessibility, different levels of crypto agility, different levels of computing power. And ultimately, it means in reality, we're going to have dozens or hundreds of segments that are going to have to be treated differently.
And we also have different levels of risk. So if you're talking about an IoT sensor and whether or not the data that it's being transmitted can be decrypted a month after it was first transmitted, well, that the risk and implications of that are probably completely insignificant, right? So that's very different than if you can decrypt my banking information and my credit card information a month after it's transmitted. So there are definitely a lot of nuances to this that need to be carefully thought through.
I think, guys, we're going to have a future podcast on NIST's guidance for IoT. I think that they've done a pretty good job of specifying device types. I think they've been quite realistic in specifying that a lot of devices are just never going to be capable of doing some of the things we're talking about. I think we need to help to sort out what that NIST guidance means for manufacturers and consumers of these things and give them the synthesized thinking that I think I know that this team can do. So wait for that on a future podcast.
I think that's a great point. And as so often happens, whenever we do one of these, we try to say, well, okay, we're gonna cover a topic, and we usually unearth three other topics that need to be returned to. And I think we did that again today. There's clearly, this is just scratching the surface on this very important and very complex area. And as always with our guests, Alan, I want to give you a chance to get a last word in. What did we miss? Is there anything else you want to add?
The one thing I would add on this is, you know, as always, it's really important to be forward-looking on how we're building security into our devices. You know, if manufacturers ignore the problem and, you know, just stick their heads in the sand, it's really going to be a problem down the road. And with quantum cryptography and the changes that are going to be necessary there, it's even more true than with other areas, because, you know, once that device is out in the field, if you haven't thought through some of these future issues, it's going to be much more expensive to address after the fact.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And we've seen this a lot, you know, especially in the realm of computer consumer devices, is there's a strong tendency toward cheap, simple, and now. And cheap, simple, and now might help you in the next 90 days, but you might really pay the price down the road.
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. Well, maybe this is a good time to leave it. Great conversation, gentlemen, as always. Jason Tsang, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Tim.
Alan, thank you for joining us today. You've always been great whenever you've been on.
Thanks, Tim.
And this is Root Causes.